The time set for the oral argument in case number 86191-COA Elmore versus Heron, a child custody matter that's presented to us through the pro bono program. And we want to thank both counsel for stepping up and taking this case on, both you and your firms. It's much appreciated by the court. And if you don't have much experience in family law, at least you get a shot at it here. But, we're looking forward to the argument. So we have Ms. Coles representing the appellant here, Ms. Elmore. So you get 15 minutes. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, there
4 minutes. 4 minutes, okay. And of course, I'm joined today by my two colleagues, Judge Monty Bullitt to my left and Judge Deborah Westbrook to my right. Our last oral arguments were just 2 days ago at Boyd Law School, so much different setting there than it is here, but it's always nice to be back in this courtroom. It's such a beautiful courtroom. I don't know if you've been in here before or not, but I'm kind of awed by it every time I come in here. It's much better than the one in Carson City. All right, and also Mr. Burke is here representing the respondent, Mr. Heron. So you ready to go, Ms. Coles?
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Madeline Coles, and I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant, Heavenly Hope Elmore. This case involves the custody of two minor children. As this court knows, the sole consideration for a district court in determining custody is what is in the best interest of the children. The district court here abused its discretion in granting primary physical custody to Mr. Heron without making specific findings regarding the best interest factors, and likewise failing to provide an adequate explanation of the reason for its ultimate custody determination. Ms. Elmore respectfully requests that the court remand this case back to the district court for full presentation of evidence and a redetermination of custody. Ms. Elmore does not contest that the district court applied the correct legal standard in its order. That is, the best interests of the children as informed by the 12 statutory factors listed in NRS 125C.0035. In addition to any other relevant factors. Ms. Elmore also recognizes that a district court has broad discretion in making a custody determination. But as the Nevada Supreme Court held in Ellis v. Carucci, the district court must have reached its conclusions for the appropriate reasons. In order for an appellate court to be able to determine with assurance that the custody determination was made for the appropriate reasons, it is crucial that the district court make specific factual findings with regard to each best interest factor and provide an adequate explanation of the reasons for its ultimate custody determination. This is as the Nevada Supreme Court held in Davis versus Uelapo. In that case, the court held that a district court's custody order must tie the child's best interest as informed by specific relevant findings respecting the best interest factors to the custody determination made. Notably, the court in Davis also recognized the proper consideration of the best interests of the child is not achieved simply by processing the case through the best interest factors and announcing a ruling. The district court below abused its discretion by first failing to make specific findings with respect to each best interest factor, and second, failing to tie the few factual findings it did make to its ultimate custody determination. Initially, prior to setting forth the findings of fact and conclusions of law, the court's order includes a footnote, and this is on page 70 of the record, that states that the court has determined the credibility of each witness and the weight to be given to their testimony. But the court failed to articulate those determinations. Nowhere throughout the rest of the order does the court explain who it found credible or what weight it was giving to specific testimony or specific facts.
So Ms. Coles, one of the findings that the court made was that it was especially concerned that your client had essentially cut off Bryce's ability to communicate with the children after moving to Kansas. And the court repeated kind of that finding in a number of its best interest factor conclusions. So your opponent in this case, Mr. Burke, is arguing that that finding actually is significant and that that sort of explains why the district court did what it did. How do you respond?
That's a good question, Your Honor. And I think part of the answer of that ties into the fact that the district court failed to articulate its what exactly its determinations were with regard to witness credibility, because the district court does state in one spot that the act of Ms. Elmore in cutting off Mr. Heron's communication with the children was especially concerning. In every other place in the order that discusses that, it simply says Mr. Heron testified this. It also says Ms. Elmore testified this. It says that Ms. Elmore testified that she did that because Mr. Heron had threatened to take the children away from her. And because, you know, she had, I think she had other testimony regarding that. And partly because of Mr. Heron's bad behavior. The district court never says that he just didn't find that testimony to be credible, and never said that he was according more weight to Mr. Heron's testimony that she had cut off communication. The district court doesn't make any of those findings. So the sole finding that we're left with is that it did find that Ms. Elmore cut off communication to be concerning. But it also found that Ms. Elmore testified the reasons that she had done that. So there's not a sufficient support within the rest of the order. What we're left with essentially is this one finding that additionally doesn't tie it to the best interests of the children. He notes that under the heading of one of the factors, the factor that he makes that specific finding that he thinks it's concerning, I think, is the ability of the parents to cooperate to meet the needs of the child. As the respondent notes in his brief, he says that, you know, it appears that that affected the third factor, and it might have also affected the fifth factor. But for, I think, the fourth factor, but he only makes that finding under the heading of that specific factor, and he doesn't tie it to the best interests of the children.
So are we allowed to work backwards and look at what the court did and then kind of point to one of the factors where the court indicated that it had some concern? Is that sufficient under the law?
I think that under Davis versus Welfo, that's not sufficient, because then the appellate court is making inferences based on one thing that the district court said of what the district court thought, but that's not findings that the district court made in its order. It's possible that given that the district court found it was concerned about the act of cutting off communication, it's possible that the district court thought that Mr. Heron would be the parent more likely to provide the other parent with a relationship, or Mr. Heron would be the parent more likely to be able to resolve the conflict between the parties. But those findings are not in the order. So this court would have to assume that that's what the district court was thinking. But Davis versus Welfo clearly states that the court needs to make specific factual findings, tie those factings to the best findings, to the best interest factors, and use that as an adequate explanation for its ultimate custody determination.
Ms. Coles, is there a jurisdictional problem here with the court exercising jurisdiction due to the fact that the children were living in Kansas at the time Mr. Heron filed the petition?
Ms. Elmore does not contest the jurisdiction here, as she recognized that the children have been living in Nevada and pursuant to the Uniform Child Custody Act, that Nevada was the home of the children as she had moved to Kansas not 6 months prior to Mr. Heron initiating this custody.
Did she move with the children with the approval of Mr. Heron? Did he give his permission for the move?
Yes, at the time she moved, Mr. Heron was aware of and had consented to the move.
Did he visit the children in Kansas?
No, the record doesn't reflect that Mr. Heron visited the children in Kansas until the preliminary case management conference, after which the district court set an interim custody order. Part of that interim custody order allowed Mr. Heron to visit the children in Kansas.
And did he? Do you know?
Yes, he did visit the children in Kansas during the interim before the trial. That was part of also, contested testimony. Ms. Elmore stated that when he came to pick up the children, one of the children clung on to her, didn't want to go with him. She also stated that when he brought the children back, one of the children was covered in urine. The other children had been wearing the same clothes for 3 days. And again, this is all testimony that's in the district court's order. and testimony that the district court doesn't ever say that it didn't find credible or that it wasn't giving weight to. But then the district court announces a ruling granting Mr. Heron primary physical custody that isn't adequately explained by the district court's order, in large part because the district court's order essentially reads like a play-by-play of the hearing. He states what each party testified, but fails to draw its own conclusions based on the testimony of parties. That's the essential element that this court requires in Davis versus Welfo, because it's, and that element is necessary to ensure that the district court's order was made for an appropriate reason. Here, given that the main factual finding the court makes that isn't simply a recitation of one party or the other's testimony, is that Ms. Elmore cut off communication, Mr. Heron's communication with the children, and that the district court additionally fails to explain how that act affects the best interests of the children. As I mentioned earlier, he doesn't ever find that in light of that, Mr. Heron would be more likely to allow her to have a relationship. In light of that, Mr. Heron would be the party with less conflict. He doesn't make those findings. He doesn't carry that through. So what we're left with is that it appears, based solely on the district court's order, that this determination was made to punish Ms. Elmore for that act of cutting off communication, and not necessarily made because this custody determination is what is in the best interest of the children. So, and that's the requirement.
Ms. Coles, if Ms. Elmore is successful in this appeal, what happens upon remand? Do you envision any more hearings, any evidentiary hearings, a temporary order? I mean, these people live 1,500 miles or more apart. And what happens in the meantime?
That's an understandable question, Your Honor. I think that, you know, a temporary, an interim order pending, you know, if this court were to issue a remand and have the courts, I think that it would be helpful to have another evidentiary hearing and to have the court evaluate the evidence and remand with instructions for the district court to explain, to draw conclusions, to draw specific factual findings based on the evidence. That's not just a recitation of each party's testimony.
Is a new evidentiary hearing necessary, or could the court just go back and look at the testimony and actually make the findings based on the record before it?
I mean, I think that the district court, given that it was, you know, presented with all of this evidence the first time, and given that it stated in its order the first time that it had evaluated the testimony, the evidence, and made determinations as to witness credibility and the weight, it could just evaluate the same record before it, but provide a more fulsome order that's compliant with David versus Uelfo, and adequately explain the reasoning for his decision. And that way this court can, you know, if we're to go to appellate review again, this court would be able to adequately determine whether that was an appropriate reason.
Right. So the hearing was January 26, 2023. Exactly one day short of a year ago. So we'll ask opposing counsel what he thinks about that too. But it's something that people don't always argue, because, you know, family situations are changing all the time. And probably technically what Judge Westbrook was suggesting would be all that's necessary, just look at it again and make new findings if it was remanded, but maybe not.
Well, let me ask this question, and I know you wanted to reserve your time, but what is Ms. Elmore desiring in terms of custody? What does she want in terms of physical custody?
Ms. Elmore would like primary physical custody of the children, with Mr. Heron having physical custody on holidays, holidays during the school year, during the summer, an order similar to this, but she would like to be the primary physical custodian and have the children with her in Kansas.
In light of the fact that your client does desire primary physical custody, do you believe then an evidentiary hearing is more appropriate in light of the fact that currently Mr. Heron has primary custody?
Yes, I think that it could be more appropriate, particularly given, as Justice Gibbons mentioned, that it's been a year. A lot can happen in a year. So I think that it could be appropriate, an appropriate time to have a new evidentiary hearing. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Burke.
Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court, Christopher Burke or Mr. Herron. The question is, how much is enough? Did the court go far enough? And the court asked about remand. That is problematic. If there's changed circumstances, she can bring a new motion and start over. But so otherwise, you remand and say, give more facts. He's not going to change anything. Why? Or at least the ultimate result, because what is noticeably absent is any factor for Ms. Elmore. Everything was either neutral, irrelevant, or for Mr. Herron. And there weren't a lot of factors. So it would go back down. He'd write in more detail and hook up the factors with what he found. But the court's not going to change it. And then who, if that's the extent the court just wants to send it back and say, beef up your order, I understand that. But I think it's a waste.
I was wondering about this. It's a kind of an unusual situation. Normally we hear parties challenging these pretrial orders where somebody goes out of state, like happened here, and that it like sets up how the case is going to end. I mean, what the pretrial order ends up determining. We've heard this argument before. This case, it was the opposite. I mean, the court, both your client and then later the court, allowed Ms. Elmore to go and have the children. It's not even a custody, it's not even a relocation case. It's just a custody case.
Right. He let her go, and then we saw what happened. She cut off communication, and the court wanted both parents involved. And he was worried, if they're 1,500 miles away or wherever Kansas is, that this would continue, or she used that as a tool against him. And so that was the overwhelming factor.
Well, Mr. Burke, your client did get to see the children in Kansas.
Yeah, I think he had 1 4-day visit or something.
Was that by his choice, or was that just the circumstance that presented?
It looked as though the fact said he had so many phone calls, and then he had the ability to go out there for 4 days. I think she didn't want him around much because allegedly she was worried about him. But again, she can have that same right to come and see the kids here in Nevada.
How old are the children?
At this time, I do not recall.
Do you think the children's age plays any type of role in what's in their best interest?
Of course.
What factors are you aware of that you believe the court did tie to the best interest findings?
The third factor, which parent is more likely to allow the child to have a continuing relationship with the non-custodial parent? That the court was concerned that both parents be involved, and that if Ms. Elmore had primary custody, she would use that as a pawn against him. And so
they're 4 and 2 years old now. Birthdays were in December. So pretty, really young children.
And at this time, I'm sure they're used to being with dad in Nevada. And then if Ms. Elmore is looking to redo it and have a new evidentiary hearing, and maybe the kids can be taken away to Kansas. There's two other factors though. Who's going to pay for that? I mean, these are pro bono. This is a pro bono appeal. Who's going to pay for that on remand? Are you going to get more pro bono attorneys involved because she didn't like the way it went the first time? She can always, if circumstances change, she can always bring a new motion to change custody if she has a valid reason. And so it's not as if she's cut off forever. And based on the factors, and the court did go through all the factors, and I agree, it's loosely tied. There's no question. We would all like to see more.
Did the court ever say explicitly that any of the factors favored either parent?
Specifically say that?
Yeah, were the words, this factor favors mom, this factor favors dad,
no,
is that anywhere in there?
Well,
indirectly by saying some of the factors he didn't find where the mom accused the dad of certain things, drinking or violence, and he says, I don't find that. So, but specifically, word for word, no. And I understand, as I said, that's the only argument they have, and it's a good argument. It'd be disconcerting to me if I was on the other side. But I think there's enough here, and remand does nothing. So we get another order that's beefed up.
How does the court's order satisfy Davis v. Iwulifo?
I'm sorry, what was
How does the order actually satisfy Davis? Tying the custody determination to the child's best interest.
It comes down to the judge apparently felt the best interest for the children was to be with the parent who was more likely to share custody, as opposed to the parent who was less likely and had already proven that. Other than that, I appreciate the court's jurisdictional problem. I remember looking at that and saying, wait a second, but nobody brought it up. Is it waivable? Perhaps, but even if there wasn't enough in the judge's order, I would argue it's harmless error. It's not going to change anything. No factor went for Ms. Elmore.
Is there any point in the record that will allow us to tell how long the children actually lived with mom in Kansas? Did they live with her until the court ordered primary custody for your client?
I believe it was for a few months that they were out there. And unless there's any other questions, I'll just rest on the brief and curious to see how the court rules.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Ms. Bowles.
Thank you, Your Honors. I have just a few quick points on rebuttal. First, with regard to what counsel said, that Mr. Heron was worried that Ms. Elmore's behavior and not letting him have access to the children would continue. It didn't continue, and that's shown by the record. She set up FaceTimes. She allowed him to have FaceTimes with the children. He went to Kansas and visited the children. She gave the children to him when she was supposed to. He brought them back when he was supposed to. The record shows that that behavior didn't continue. And further, the record also shows that she testified that she wanted Mr. Heron to be in her children's lives, that she felt that he was a good father, and it was important to her that her children had him as a father, that she spoke about him with her children, that they had a picture of all of them together in the house. Again, as testimony that the district court didn't discredit. And with regard to any modification of the custody order, as opposing counsel suggested, she could bring a modification based on changed circumstances. In Davis versus Iwulifo, the court noted that specific findings are so important because a modification relies on changed circumstances. And how can Ms. Elmore show that circumstances have changed if she wasn't adequately advised of what the exact circumstances were that were the reason for the district court's custody determination in the first place? Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, that concludes.